half-hour, I will be reading to you from the April 2021 Walter Magazine. We begin today with a look back in Prescription for History. A Reconstructed Pharmacy offers an immersive look at the 1920s and reflection for today by Hampton Williams Hoffer. Imagine offering a cigarette to someone in the middle of an asthma attack. Here, while you're wheezing, light one up. Silly by today's standards, but sensible a century ago. A 1920s era box of Dr. R. Schiffman's Asthmador cigarettes directs one to, quote, expel the air from the lungs, then fill the mouth with smoke and take a deep breath, hold for a few seconds, then exhale, end quote. In a modern world where parents warn their middle schoolers about vaping, and particularly these days, when we're wearing face coverings to prevent the spread of respiratory illness, asthma cigarettes exemplify just how much medicine has evolved. And if you don't believe they were real, full of ingredients like stramonium leaves and belladonna, you can head down to Edenton Street and check out the green cardboard packaging for yourself. Walk through the main doors of the North Carolina Museum of History. Grab a pump of sanitizer, and head left up the stairs to the third floor. By the time your hands are dry, you will have traveled back in time 100 years. It's there that you'll find an entire 1920s pharmacy, preserved from the marble soda fountain to the mahogany display cabinets, all original features from J.C. Brantley Pharmacy, formerly at 709 Hillsborough Street. The drugstore is so much more than a basic museum exhibit. Not to knock glass cases and wall plaques, but this is something different. Here, you step through the doors, look up at the light fixtures, walk in, spin around, peek over the soda fountain at the old ice cream case. The exhibit surrounds you. You can almost taste the root beer floats. Under a sign for 5-cent Pepsi Cola, refreshing and healthful, it reads, sits a candy display with licorice gumdrops and Swinson's peppermints. It's where our grandparents would have gone for Vicks Rub and Niles Hair Tonic. It's like walking into the past, says Diana Bell Kite, the museum's curator of cultural history, and the more you look, the more you see. To relocate an entire drugstore to the museum was no small feat. The efforts began 40 years ago, when a group of retired pharmacists started working with the NCMH to collect all manner of pharmaceutical artifacts from the 1920s in North Carolina. Then in 1991, when John Brantley donated the entirety of the J.C. Brantley Pharmacy to the museum, staffers got to work cataloging and packing thousands of items from the store. We wanted to create an immersive experience for the visitor, says John Campbell, NCMH collections manager. The artifacts filled 2 transfer trucks, and then came the real work of cleaning and reassembling the wooden cabinetry and marble soda fountain. Conservators had to work with state agencies to properly dispose of dangerous narcotics still in some of the old bottles. The refurbished pharmacy first opened in 1998 as part of the North Carolina Health and Healing Exhibit. I understand why it's one of our more popular spaces, says Campbell, because I still see items in the space that I've not appreciated before. Beyond being immersive in person, the drugstore is now the first exhibit at the NCMH to be available online as a virtual tour. The museum contracted with a company to bring in the cameras and technology needed to scan the space in 360 degrees. With this special imaging, web visitors from all over the world can now move around and even go further than in-person visitors by, quote, stepping behind the soda counter or into the pharmacist's office. You can roam, zoom, read labels on bottles of medicinal oils, and click on white dots that offer more details and links. It's really exciting for us to have the digital tour, says Belkite. As a museum, we hope to continue in a post-COVID world with programming developed in response to the pandemic, meaning more online in general, allowing people to virtually experience as much as those who can walk through. Part of the NCMH's mission is to explore how the past influences the present, and you can see that influence in the products for sale here, which aren't so different from the things we'd grab today at Walgreens. Toothbrushes. Only here, the bristles are made of horsehair. Rubs for muscle aches. Here, it's Sloan's liniment, which was also used on farm animals. And children's toys. Here, it's a Schoenhut all-wood train. One big difference. We don't go to Walgreens to hang out. A century ago, these drugstores were social epicenters. Home refrigeration wasn't exactly widespread, so you'd grab a cold soda and catch up with friends while the pharmacist was in the back, grinding medicine with mortar and pestle. With hospitals few and far between, a drugstore was as close as many North Carolinians came to a healthcare institution. Another big difference? This soda counter would have been racially segregated in the 1920s. Black customers could have purchased products from the display cases, but they could not have sat down at a place like this. Just as the 100-year-old labels offer a lens into what has and hasn't changed in medicine, getting fully immersed in the pharmacy, in person or online, offers a chance to reflect on the evolution of our social dynamics. In a society still grappling with its messy racial history, the past offers an opportunity to reflect on the present. And that's what the NCMH does for us. Hidden among the relics from the 14,000 years that humans have inhabited our state, we find clues as to how we've evolved and how much further we have to go. And from the locals department, Project Zero, a local organization works to reduce waste in the Triangle and beyond, by Kayla Williams. When Lee Williams prepared to go scuba diving in Koh Tao, Thailand in 2003, she imagined what would be waiting for her on the ocean floor. A collage of oranges, pinks, and blues, myriad corals, fish, and sea flora. But when she went underwater, what awaited her was much duller. The coral was all faded. It wasn't vibrant. And there was trash on the ocean floor, she says. Every single time I dove, I came up with trash in my back pocket. I picked batteries up off the bottom of the ocean. I picked up caps from the tops of plastic bottles. I picked up all kinds of weird trash. The trip started Williams on her environmental journey, eventually inspiring her to start the nonprofit Toward Zero Waste with a friend, Dargan Gilmore. The organization, based in Cary, aims to address plastic pollution and waste by encouraging communities, businesses, and local governments to adopt a zero-waste mindset. On social media, the @ZeroWaste hashtag pulls up images of glass jars full of dry goods, beautiful bamboo dinnerware, and glass spray bottles filled with homemade cleaning solutions. But its true principles are not tied to aesthetics. Zero waste is about reducing what you buy, reusing what you have, sending little to be recycled, and aiming to send nothing to the landfill. Williams and Gilmore first met through an international Zero Waste Facebook group for those interested in adopting a low-waste lifestyle. We ended up meeting on one of those posts where they ask where everybody's from, and we figured out we were from the same area, William says. So we planned to meet up, and that was it. Gilmore says she considers herself to be a lifelong environmentalist, someone who loves to hike and backpack. But it was actually the movie, An Inconvenient Truth, that was a kind of turning point for me, she says. The documentary about former U.S. Vice President Al Gore's global warming campaign led Gilmore to understand the potentially catastrophic impacts of climate change on the planet. She ditched her gas car for an electric one and started being more conscious of how much plastic waste she was creating at home. What I know now that I didn't then was that sight was just a sign of how much bigger the problem was, says Williams of her revelation in Thailand. Every year, about 8 million tons of plastic waste escapes into the oceans from the coast. To avoid adding to it, Williams started making swaps when grocery shopping, using reusable bags instead of plastic ones, and bringing her own containers to fill with bulk foods instead of buying them pre-packaged. After Gilmore and Williams met, they decided to start their own localized Facebook groups, Toward Zero Waste Raleigh and Toward Zero Waste Cary, to connect with community members and share what could and couldn't be recycled, learn what the best low-waste shops in the area were, and trade tips for composting food scraps and paper. As these groups started to grow, each now has over 1,000 members. More groups under the TZW name were started all across the state, from Wilmington to Chapel Hill to Asheville. Williams and Gilmore started teaching zero-waste classes, hosting free movie screenings, organizing landfill tours, and providing other free educational resources to their community, like guides to zero-waste shopping and a statewide green business directory. And each local TZW group, overseen by the two but led by a volunteer community director, started developing zero-waste events and initiatives within their own community. Andrea Rushing, the community director for Cary, says she loves the opportunity TZW gives her to connect with her community, and as a homeschooling mom, helping educate on zero-waste swaps and principles is her favorite part. I really believe that knowledge is the heart of everything, she says. I think that's the key to zero waste, the sharing of information with your community, because it can be so hard to change habits when you're so used to what you were taught growing up. As the groups and initiatives kept growing, it made sense to make TZW a nonprofit instead of a rogue little community organization, Gilmore says. And by January 2020, after a slew of complicated paperwork and legal measures, they were. But just 3 months later, they were having to learn how to operate as a nonprofit during a pandemic. It's been bad and good because we can reach a lot more people in virtual events than we can in person, Gilmore says, but it has definitely been quite the learning process. The pandemic has also come with an onslaught of trash. Paper masks, takeout containers, plastic grocery bags, and more. There's been an upswing in single-use items as we avoid germs at all costs. TZW is now faced with the challenge of encouraging sustainability while still prioritizing safety, suggesting tips like swapping disposable masks for reusable ones, and refusing as much excess waste as you can when ordering takeout. While they're currently focused on the pandemic, they're also thinking about the best ways to make an impact when the world gets back to normal. TZW is volunteer-driven, and Williams and Gilmore agree that their success lies in providing their volunteers across the state with resources to start initiatives in their own communities. I'd like to see us be able to support volunteers who want to make a big impact, whether that's helping them get a grant so they can open a zero-waste store or helping them support legislation, Williams says. But for now, the duo says they're focusing on making the most of another year of virtual programming and reminding their community that every small change can make a big impact. We'll have our virtual events, like movie screenings, but we'll also have a few outside community events because we need our community, Williams says. But overall, we will be continuing to push back against this single-use mindset because we have to stop it. And from creators, every moment is a view. Through his art, Richard Wilson bridges the gap between then and now by Wiley Cash. Spend some time with visual artist Richard Wilson's work, and you'll quickly grasp the role historical connection plays in it. Take his Shadow series, for example. In each painting, an African-American boy or girl stands in the foreground, the background comprised of images of an African-American trailblazer. In one piece, a girl in a leather bomber jacket blocks the sun from her eyes and stares toward the horizon, as if searching for a sign of what's to come. Behind her is an assemblage of newspaper stories and photographs of Bessie Coleman, the first African-American woman to hold a pilot's license. Another shows a young boy in oversized boxing gloves gazing up at a speed bag that's just out of reach. Behind him, a newspaper announces that Jack Johnson has defeated James Jeffries to become the 1910 heavyweight champion of the world, the first African-American to win the title. Other luminaries, such as Arthur Ashe, Serena Williams, Michael Jordan, and Barack Obama, are featured in the series, each as a guiding light for the young dreamer standing, quote, in the shadow. To the viewer, it's clear that ancestors and aspiration are powerfully present in Wilson's artwork. And if you spend any time with the artist himself, you'll understand that ancestors and aspiration are powerfully present in his own life. The oldest of three boys, Wilson was born in Robersonville in Martin County and moved with his family to Kanita, another rural town in eastern North Carolina, when he was 8. He grew up surrounded by family, siblings, cousins, aunts and uncles. They were close-knit. Today, Wilson is standing in the middle of his art studio in Greenville, where he and his wife have lived for just over 20 years. The walls around him are festooned with his original works and ribbons from national art shows, the floor cluttered with framed prints and works in progress. Wilson, a tall man who looks like a linebacker, yet comports himself like a poet, admits that he has nearly outgrown the space that he built himself. On the wall opposite him is a framed original painting titled A Window into the Past, in which an older African-American man with a cane is picking his way across a field to a weathered two-story farmhouse. The man in the painting is William's uncle. The home, which has since been demolished, once belonged to Wilson's paternal grandmother, Frances Wilson Knight, lovingly known to everyone, family or otherwise, as Grandma Pigaboot. Every weekend we'd go to my grandmother's house, Wilson says, gesturing toward the painting. All the children and grandchildren, that was the highlight of my week. My uncle, who was a sharecropper, would cook on the grill. We'd all play kickball and softball. I can still smell the rain on the dirt, the trees, pears, and pecans. It was a beautiful life. He sighs, and his broad shoulders slump forward slightly. But when my grandmother passed away, we all stopped going back there, and we just lost that connection. Although Wilson's work is nothing if not realistic, each piece contains elements of symbolism that could be lost on the casual viewer. In the painting of Grandma Pigaboot's house, The electrical service entrance, where the home had once been connected to a power line, is frayed and disconnected. That's exactly how Wilson felt in 2020, a year that saw a pandemic cripple the globe and political and cultural turmoil seize the heart and soul of the nation. Wilson used his art to reconnect with his family, his community, and the landscape that once brought him so much joy. Although we had featured his grandmother's house in previous works, last year he found himself wanting to paint it again, and this time he wanted to include a family member. He called up his Uncle Bill and asked if he could come take some photographs of him. Uncle Bill happily obliged. It had been a while since they'd seen each other. "We started talking about old times," Wilson says, "and he started posing for me, and I started taking pictures of him. We had a great time." But Wilson wanted to keep the reunion a secret. "I told him, 'Don't tell your children I'm doing this painting,'" says Wilson. "I wanted to put it on Facebook to see if they recognized the house and recognized that their father was in the painting." Imagine Wilson's delight when, after posting the finished painting online, Uncle Bill's youngest daughter wrote this: "Hey, cuz, I really like this piece. It reminds me of back in the day, and the man in the picture reminds me of my pops." Comments from other cousins followed, each expressing tender sentiments. "And then they started buying prints," Wilson says, supporting him at a time when art shows had been canceled due to COVID. "It brought us all back together." Of course, the house in the painting represents much more than just a place. Wilson's grandmother bequeathed him a legacy that highlights the importance of family, faith, land, and self-reliance, all of which Wilson has made use of through his path to becoming a full-time artist against incredible odds. "My grandmother took us around and made sure that she introduced us to all our family members," Wilson says. "She was adamant about that, about knowing who your people are." He stops speaking and smiles as if a memory is playing through his mind. "She also taught us how to be entrepreneurs. We used to turn in Coke bottles and get cash for them, and then we'd turn around and buy candy and sell it. Or we'd make Kool-Aid and turn it into freeze cups, and then we'd sell those." She also taught Wilson and his siblings and cousins how to make use of the land by taking them fishing and teaching them how to sow gardens. And she instilled the importance of faith in their lives by ensuring that they accompanied her to church. Wilson has won countless awards for his art, which has been featured in television shows and films, showcased in public and private collections, and purchased by the likes of Hank Aaron and Gladys Knight. Those early lessons from his grandmother have allowed him to turn a childhood spark of inspiration into the passionate flame that fuels his work. His Shadow series makes that clear. Wilson acknowledges that not everyone is as lucky to have had the family and influences he's had. Yet that's the great thing about forging a connection with people you love. "If you didn't have it then," he says, "you can start it now." One could say the same about living your dream. And from Endnote, Window on the World. Astronaut Christina Cook delivers A Fresh Perspective on Earth by Tim Peeler. Christina Cook has seen the Earth from every angle. Its bright blue landscape captured in her trusty digital camera from 250 miles above the planet's surface. Last March, the NASA astronaut returned from a 328-day stay on the International Space Station, the longest time spent by a woman in space. Cook participated in 6 spacewalks, including the first ever with an all-female crew, and spent 42 hours and 15 minutes tethered outside the space station, making repairs and conducting experiments. In all, Cook orbited the Earth 5,248 times and traveled 139,053,992 miles. Cook first remembers dreaming of space as a 5-year-old in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and a stint at space camp cemented her vision. Her family moved to North Carolina, and she attended the North Carolina School of Science and Mathematics for high school, then earned bachelor's degrees in electrical engineering and physics, and a master's in electrical engineering from North Carolina State University. "My time at State was one of constant discovery," Cook says. After graduation, Cook worked as a NASA engineer, then as a researcher in remote outposts like the South Pole, Greenland, and American Samoa. Those assignments taught her to live in isolation, without the company of friends or family, helpful not just for her time in space, but for her return to Earth in the midst of a pandemic. Being comfortable with not seeing your loved ones in person and finding ways to be supportive virtually is a big parallel with being at the space station, Cook says. Her next celestial steps? Cook was selected to be part of NASA Artemis, a program that will land the first woman and next man on the moon. A 3-year mission, Artemis 1 will fly to the moon without astronauts and without landing. Artemis 2 will take astronauts into the moon's orbit. And Artemis 3 will return humans to the surface of the moon for the first time since 1972. "It's very exciting," says Cook. "I'll probably know the first woman and the next man to walk on the surface of the moon. Any of us would be ready and honored to accept that mission." From the calendar, "It's time we start normalizing mental health support." So says current wellness co-owner, counselor, and wellness advocate Britt Guerin. She and her team are hosting an online Mindfulness 101 series to help. With themes such as reset, compassion, and balance, the classes include guided meditation and discussions around community and connection. While this is an 8-week series, Guerin says even drop-ins are welcome and one session will benefit you. Visit currentwellnessraleigh.com for more information. We've run out of time for today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Walter Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.